It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Perfect for Netflix because you can spend the weekend watching it. I mean, they did some crazy things on 24.
Oh,
the second season. No, I mean, the sort of the show behind them. We had a competition. There was a competition. People came and sat in the bunker. They watched the whole series in one weekend in the bunker.
In the bunker.
They'd won a competition. So they came and watched it. People would call and they said, no, we it's a family gathering. People would go to work, go home off on a Monday night, go home, change, shower, go back to work to be with their co-workers to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing. People, you know, families would get together and like, you know, and they'd say, you know, even the three-year-old, it was like, oh, really? It's like, yeah, I know, it's a bit too young for them. But, you know, the whole family there, it was a gathering.
We're so pleased to have Joseph Hodges joining us today and talking about 24 and the 20 years of 24. How did you get connected to the show?
Just my agent. I mean, I interviewed for the pilot. Yeah. And Joel actually gave me the job. Well, he called my agent and said, look, I really want Joseph to do it.
Mm.
And I'm not sure, and I really can't remember. I'm not sure if he said, I really want him to do it, but because I'd also interviewed with somebody at the studio. Anyway, and Joel called my agent and said, I really wanted Joseph to do it, but the studio won't go for it because he doesn't have as much experience as this other person. So and my agent did represent the other person. So I guess that's why he knew. This other person got the pilot. And so they shot the pilot. And then from what I was told, that that person didn't want to do the series because he wanted to just do movies. He was quite happy to do pilots, but he didn't want to do the series. And so Joel called my agent and said, would I do the series? The same guy at Fox made me interview with him again. So I remember going in, and I'm sure I didn't get the job at that point. And I remember walking out of his office, and as I was leaving his office, I turned around and I said, you know, he had this painting behind him, and I really liked it. It was very, it was obscure, but I could tell with the colors and its shapes and things that it was very Spanish. You know, to me, it looked like tiles, Spanish houses. And I said, oh, by the way, I like your Spanish villas painting. And he was like, what? You can see that? And I was like, yeah, I like it. And I left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know if that convinced him that perhaps I, you know, I had the eye.
Right. Detail.
So then I started on 24. And I remember, as you say, I watched the pilot.
Okay.
And I fast forwarded the VHS tape because I wanted to know what happened. I knew there was no other, but I fast forwarded it till the end, the tape finished. And so I watched it, and I asked Joel. So I went back to Joel, and I said, listen, they shot it all on location.
Right.
CPU was location. I want to make it a bit more high-tech. There was brickwork and the ceiling. There was all wood. They shot it in Fox Sports, a Fox Sports set.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Where they, not the set, but where the Fox Sports people were, journalists, right. Or I don't know. So Joel said, sure, you can make it more high tech. And we also shot, we did the whole 2-3 minutes of the opening in the Kuala Lumpur streets. I built that in the parking lot. when the guy goes into this hut and makes the telephone call, and right. then the other guy that gets the phone call that there's going to be assassination, that was all added.
Okay, right. That wasn't part of the original pilot.
No.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Joel, so I think I had been there for 3 days, and Stephen Hopkins, the director of the pilot, who was then going to do every other two episodes, he came to my office, I think. I don't know if I ran into him. I think he came to my office and he said, so a little bird's told me that Joel's a little, not upset, but he's a little worried that he hasn't seen you for 3 days.
Right.
And I was like, you should go and talk to him. So I said, okay. I mean, I did talk to him, and I'm making it high tech, and it's just 3 days. I've got to do drawings and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I went to Joel's office, and I remember what I wanted to say was, Joel, I hear, you know, you might be a little worried. I want to tell you, you know, the way I work is I give a, you know, I'll do the whole design, and then I'll present it to you rather than piecemeal. And all I got out was, Joel, the way I work is, he goes, no, let me stop you there. Let me tell you how I work. And he proceeded to tell me how he was a hands-on producer and blah, 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 and he needed to see everything. I said, yeah, no problem. Absolutely no problem. So I finished the design, showed it to him. And then from then on, I would present everything to him. We would walk the sets, and he would you know, just walk through the sets with me and perhaps make a little... I remember walking through some kids' bedroom once and he made some changes. But then, and I can't remember, I thought it was 5 episodes in, but now I'm thinking about it. What, it must have been season 2 when Jack is in a police station.
Okay.
He's arrested and he's in a cell.
Right, yes.
So that's season 2.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so... So that must have been the whole way through the first season. Joel, hands-on producer, he needed to see everything, and I right. showed him everything. That episode, I went to him, I said, so the police station, what are you thinking? He goes, so, you know, you have police station, an NYPD blue, that kind of look. And I said, Joel, I'm trying to give you a cool-looking show.
Right.
I'm trying to do, I'm not sure if I told him, but in my mind, I was always doing James Bond, that it was... It was real, but there was a style to it. At the time on television, you could only watch West Wing and ER, and it was all based in the real world.
Right.
So yeah. I rarely, even when Palmer had an American flag in a painting behind him, I had done that painting. It was very obscure. Uh-huh. I know in the first season when Palmer is doing his speech, the massive American flag there. But that's what that produced. But I tried my best to just make a world of 24.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so Joe, so I said to Joe, look, I'm trying to give you a cool looking show. Trying to create a look. And so I said, there's this police station in North Hollywood that I don't know what the interior looks like, but the exterior is glass block and it's quite kind of sleek. So I want to do, you know, the scene in The Matrix where Keanu's mouth getting zipped up mm-hmm. and it's all just light green. I want to do the whole police station like that. And so I was like, okay, give it a go.
Wow.
So I designed this police station. And as you can see, it was very like no other police station you'd seen, it wasn't really a police station in The Matrix. It was just this room. So it's that green. Anyway, so I'm walking Joel through the set. And Joel finishes walking through the set. And at that point, he just turns to me and goes, okay, you're my production designer. We don't need to talk about sets anymore. I leave that up to you.
I trust you.
Yeah, so that must have been a year, you know, the beginning of season 2.
Right.
And from then on, for the next... Well, I did 8 seasons. So for the next 170 episodes, or minus the first season... I never talked to Joel about sets, and directors would arrive and they would say, oh, I shot at this location last week and I really want to go back there. And I'd look at pictures and I said, no, I'm afraid that's not 24.
Yeah.
They would want to shoot. There's no craftsman houses. There's nothing, none of that. Directors would be shocked that I had, but no, I know that when they were doing pilot season, Bruce Morgalis, the guy who was sort of the go-between between the studio and our production, He came to me and he said, "Oh, it's pilot season again. There's a lot of upset production designers out there." And I was like, "Why?" Because they don't believe that they all ask for the same money to build the sets as you do.
Right.
Or as they want the same money as 24 gets. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And they don't believe me when I tell them they've already got more.
Wow.
Because yeah. I had two warehouses. We had this huge space that I could leave sets up. I didn't have, like I say, that parking lot was, the crew would be sometimes upset because they couldn't park there. They had to park on the street.
Yeah.
Because I built the construction site there, the Kuala Lumpur streets. Then mm-hmm. when the girls are being chased through some, the warehouse, it right. was kind yeah. of two warehouses and a corridor that went, led to the, all the offices up the front. But then above, there was this other floor. So I knocked these whole walls out and I could hang backings. I can't even remember. Was it the first season where we did the bomb shelter? And there was a spiral staircase that went down. That could have been the second
season. That was season two? Kevin Dillon,
I mean, I'd be able to... I had a lot of space and I could leave stuff up.
Right.
People called when we did the Ontario airport and Jack's up in the ceiling of the airport.
Right.
They're like, "We've been to that location. There is no ceiling space up there." I was like, "No, I built it on stage." Because it was, I had a set that I had then repurposed and put something else in. I know we,
You could change it up for whatever you wanted it to be. Wow.
Jack Black did a movie and he's in a sewer and they had called us because they wanted to know what sewers we shot in because they health and safety wouldn't let them shoot in any sewers. And
right.
I was like, "No, we didn't shoot them in the sewers. We only shot, I built it on stage here."
Yeah.
And again, because I was in control of it, here you place the camera. It was only 20 feet long and a T-junction. But because I had placed, you know, it was art directed, you place the camera here and that's your shot. And
right.
We discussed it with the director. That's all he needs is Jack or whoever was coming into that. So the show looked much more expensive. Like when Jack is on the oil rig, we went to an oil rig and we did shoot there briefly, but because it's so dangerous,
right?
Mm-hmm. I built in a tank in Downey, the legs that came down into the sea, and the shot of them going in the dinghy towards the oil refinery,
right.
The oil rig, oil platform is on stage. In a parking lot, I did the bit where there's a helicopter coming in and there's a big explosion and all of that. That's in the parking lot again.
Wow.
They obviously gave us extra money for certain things.
Right.
I remember when we scouted the David Palmer's at the White House at some point, the end of season something or other, he talks to Jack on the phone and Jack is out between some pallets. Anyway, we had checked out the West Wing set. We drove out there, we check it out. It was going to cost us to rent the set. And when you take a crew on location, let's say it's 60 grand a day.
Okay. Yeah.
By the time you pay, you know, all the fees, the rentals, having people catered out there rather than on the stage. So let's say it's six. So we scouted this and it was going to cost us 60. And I said to John, Casale was directing the episode. And I said, "For 30 grand, I can build this by next Wednesday on stage. Obviously not all of this, but we don't need all of this, but the long corridor, John, you just need a long wall with windows and we'll put columns in the foreground." And John's like, "Yeah, sure. That works for me." So of course, we all go back and Michael Click, I think, was the UPM at that point, and I do the drawings and I said, "So I've got 30 grand, right?" He goes, no, "You've only got 25. And I was like, "Well, but I said I could do it for 30. "Well, you got 25, all right?"
Negotiation.
So we did, and for years, I just said, when something costs 25 grand, it costs 25 grand.
Right.
And eventually, I was so beaten down that I was like, okay, so I said to my cousin, "I'll play the game that everybody plays.
Yeah.
This set's going to cost 40 grand. oh, well, you've only got 30. And I remember doing that once, and Michael said, you've only got 30. I was like, okay. And I walked out, he says, that's all right? I was like, yeah, it was only going to cost 30 anyway. But you made me play this game.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It was when I said it was going to cost that much, it would cost that much. Sure. And then, so the only other thing I stick, because then the CTU changed at the end of season three to season four.
Right, yeah.
And again, only because Joel had that faith in me. So I went to, so I heard we were moving, right? They were knocking down our studio. There's apartments there now. It's warehouse. And so we were moving up to Chatsworth. And I'd seen this building on Scouts before. And it was this amazing glass block front. And it had these two massive feet, concrete feet, that originally, I'm sure, when they built it, because there were no trees there, the feet were reflected in the glass. And it was just, to me, it was just so beautiful.
Right.
Now, beyond that facade is just a warehouse. There literally is trucks parked at angles down the side of it. But Joel said, yeah, we're moving stage. And so I went to see him and he said, well, just rebuild CTU. And I was like, mate, we've been living in it for 3 years. Can I design a new CTU? And he was like, oh, well, and I didn't take a holiday that year. Usually you get a month off. And I stayed at home and I remember doing, build the model in the computer. And I had it pinned up in my house on the windows. I said, look, the design's been done. Come and see them. He goes, bring them to the office. I said, no, look, come to my house. He only lives around the corner. So they came and they approved it. But it had these huge concrete feet in there because people were always a bit confused because we never really established the outside.
Right. No.
We did a car explosion there, but we didn't really catch those feet. You can if you're quick about it. So I was able to design this really, really cool space. And again, it still had what we called the magic triangle, which was Jack's office or whoever. And again, that space, because 24 was always about shooting very wide angle lens up tight,
right?
A very long lens far away.
Okay.
And television, the look of television, the sets in television changed because they were all, the West Wing, you could tell.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18 plus. I can always tell when they've just done the same loop.
Right.
Spielberg actually said to, I think John met Spielberg once, and Spielberg said the thing he liked about 24 was even though you don't do establishing shots, you always knew where you were. Somebody asked me once about the boldness of the colors, and it was like, because we don't shoot wides, you need to know exactly where you are immediately.
Mm-hmm. And so each look had to be distinct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then also we used to do things like we'd shot an airport once. Oh, no, we shot what was supposed to be an airport once that was over 7 different locations because somebody asked me, was it a signature of mine to paint lines on the, stripes on corridors and things? And I was like, I like it because it breaks up the space, but mainly because I've got 7 different locations that all of different architecture slightly. That when you just see this big blue line down it, you go, oh, I'm still in the airport or something. So that was a trick I used a lot.
So as a point of reference for the audience to say, oh, this is where we are now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. Because of the real time aspect, we used to do things like we used to shoot a location and then the following episode that they hadn't written yet, once we got there, I think there was an episode where somebody's in a safe room. And at the end of that episode, they're still in the safe room or they're coming out. Anyway, I had to build the corridor of that house plus a wall that looked like they had just come from the living room. So we would do those things because it was only a couple of hours to shoot that one scene.
Right.
They didn't want to go back to the location just for that couple of hours.
Right.
What season was it where Audrey gets kidnapped at the beginning? Her and her father.
Oh, season four.
Yeah.
Okay. Which was the abduction, right?
Right.
Yes.
So the abduction, because I think the season before I'd done a little bit of second unit, it's not second unit directing. It was literally inserts.
Right. Okay.
Perhaps because of that telephone thing, I was allowed to, or you know, they gave some of their stuff. I remember doing some inserts, but then Audrey gets kidnapped in that first episode of that season, I think.
Yeah.
So John Cassar was directing that episode, and we couldn't squeeze in 3 hours of filming. And John Cassar said, well, the whole thing with Audrey getting kidnapped and the terrorists coming down the street, and let Joseph direct it.
Huh.
And everyone went, are you sure? Yeah, he'll be fine. So, because I, you know, storyboarded this whole sequence.
Right, yeah.
Going down, because I had 3 hours. And John, I remember at breakfast showing him the storyboards, and John's like, you've got 30 setups here. I need 3 shots. Yeah. I need this shot, the truck pulling up,
yeah.
La, 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 this and that, this and that. Just make sure you get those 3 shots, and you can do whatever you want.
Hmm.
It's like, all right. So in my usual way, I kind of made sure, I knew I was going to get what John wanted, but I did what I wanted to do. I walked my way down the street. I did all these shots, got everything that I had storyboarded and what John wanted. John turns up after 3 hours. He goes, so did you get my 3 shots? And I'm like, yeah. And you see, you didn't have time to do yours. I said, no, I got everything.
I did it all.
I did it all. I had it all planned. We did this, and this. Yep. And when you do second unit, people move up. Like the focus puller is now the camera operator and the gaffer is the DP and everyone's moved up. So everybody's really enthusiastic.
Yeah.
You know, they want to shoot as much as they can because it goes on their reel.
Right. Yeah.
So everyone like works like a charm. So John's like, well, the crew are still on their way. So let's do a couple more. So I think we do a little, there's a shot of somebody leaping over the bushes or something in the front yard.
Yeah.
And from then on, John used to give me, or I used to get to direct second unit. I'd be downtown LA, 3 o'clock in the morning with a small crew shooting car chases and.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the first time you had done that, was the Heller abduction scene?
Yeah, that was my first. That first scene with the terrorists, the truck screeching to a halt, the guys jumping out, walking down the street, hitting the guys in suits, the van backing up, and the door opening. I'm not sure if I had a double or John did that bit. It's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I mean, everybody that's listening to this should go to your portfolio site, because I watched that on your portfolio site yesterday.
Oh, okay.
The abduction scene, and that you had, you directed that, and that led obviously to more directing, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, because we did the prequels. That's when I got to do most directing. I didn't know at the time, because so every year you renegotiate your deal,
mm-hmm.
and part of the following year or something, because they didn't want to pay me any more money as the production designer, my agent got 30 days directing guaranteed, which were only meant 15, because the DGA rules are you get 1 day of directing and you get paid 1 day of prep.
Got it.
I would much prefer to have got the 30 days of directing for the same money. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I found out later on that doesn't apply if you're actually working on the show. I could have directed 30 days.
Got it.
But one of the producers, I don't know how many years he was. I think he was only there perhaps 2 years. I remember when I got that deal, he called me to his office and I walked in and he says, close the door. And I closed the door and he goes, what the fuck do you think you're doing? Taking food off my plate. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
you getting directing? And because he was directing some of the stuff, and I was like, I don't know. It was the beginning. There was it got. You can see if you watch the show, you don't have to watch it carefully, but you can see I peaked at the president's retreat. Joel, you know, there was me just doing what I, because again, Joel,
was that the 60s themed one?
Yeah.
Oh, see, love that.
That was supposed to be Camp David. It was written as Camp David. Yeah. And I think I'd seen Camp David on the West Wing. And again, I was like, Joel, it's old cottages in the woods. It's just
nothing spectacular.
Ugly. Can I design? He has horses. His family has horses. It's the president's retreat.
Right.
I built this pool outside, which not a pool, but just some water that you never do on stage because of leaks. Yep. So I could reflect the light in. It had this ceiling so you wouldn't shoot off it. People would call to ask where the location was because they wanted to shoot there.
Right.
And it was on stage. And that's when I think I peaked. And I loved that set so much that stuff happened that year that then I just, you could see by the time I left at season 8, did we do Division that's just a gray box?
Right, right.
I'd kind of given up. It was like, I was so beaten up. And that's why I left. It was like, I can't carry on.
Right.
And you can see, I was thinking about it the other day. You could see it in that set. I wasn't even going to try and persuade anybody that the FBI or wherever it was should be a cool space. It was like, okay, I'm just designing an office.
You held the torch as long as you could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, one of the things that stood out that really prepared us to talk to you today, Howard Gordon used the phrase, 24 was always 5 minutes ahead of everything else. And nothing describes that as much as the set design of 24 was that, like you said, this is the standard that I want it to be. And I don't want it to look like everybody else. Right. And we knew that right from the beginning that this was not, this was cinematic. This wasn't just a normal, regular old TV show. This had a sheen to it. And when you referenced James Bond, I totally got it. I totally understood. It was meant to be 5 minutes ahead.
I got tears in my eyes and goosebumps because I tried so hard.
Yeah. You succeeded. You succeeded.
I appreciate that because I always argued that I'm not, the writers are there to entertain, the actors are there to entertain, and I'm there to entertain as well. My sets were there to entertain, like a Bond movie. It was 8 long years. They were the first 5 or 6 years were fine. The last two, well, I left because I asked to direct some episodes, and if I didn't get to direct, I'd leave.
Right.
And they said no, and I left because, again, I just couldn't wrap my head around it because I think, I don't know when did we have the writer's strike? During season 7?
After season 7. No, it was before season
before,
7.
Before Redemption. Just before Redemption, because Redemption kind of came in as the interim, right?
Yeah, after season 6.
Yeah. Right, because I had done a shoot for a friend for Black, the video game. And then I did this shoot. Well, I was prepping this shoot for Need for Speed Undercover. And
this one?
Yeah, that one.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And
thank you for that, by the way. I love racing games.
I just did the live action stuff in the middle.
Right. And, yeah. Yeah.
And the week before or 2 weeks before we were going to shoot it, the writer's strike ended. We went back to work on 24, but I'd been working on that, prepping it for a month at least.
Okay.
And I think I called the UPM to tell him that I wouldn't make the production meeting the following week because I was directing the video game.
Yeah.
And he came to my office and he closed the door. He said, so you have to make a decision. You either do 24 or this video game. And I was like, well, I can't jump the video game. They're expecting me to. So I think it was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday. I said, look, I'll work till the end of the week till you find somebody else. But I have to go and do this video game.
Right. Yeah.
And he didn't even walk out and let me sort of think about it. He kind of stood there and went, oh, well, that changes things. All right, well, we'll have to work around it. And I was like, again, I was sort of so deflated that
right.
they would even try and pull that on me. Because, you know, 24 was everything to me. I died for that show. I worked so hard and I loved everything. I pissed people off because I pushed. I didn't realize that everything you do doesn't have to be the best it can be all the time, I guess.
That's your standard, though. That's a standard.
I know. Yeah. And I try even today, you know, not to be like that. My daughter helps. Having a family, having a daughter and having to have a job, I guess, to feed them makes a bit of a difference. But I didn't then. And all my baby was 24.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. I get so upset when I watch an episode and there was an orange ladder in the background or a piece of plywood on the floor. And, you know, John Cook, I used to walk on set. I didn't go to set towards the end because I would just get upset. John Cazale would say, oh, here comes Mr. Eagle Eye Hodges. I'd literally walk past the monitor and go, "Is that that's not the shot, right?" And
they're like,
yeah, why? The, you know, Jay and Guy, the two cameramen, it's like, why? What's wrong? I was like, you can't see that orange ladder? And they looked through the lens. I was like, yeah, okay, I guess we should. Can someone move that orange ladder?
Right.
And that's just my eye.
But that's what you were hired to be. You were hired to be the eye of 24.
Yeah, but they don't. There's this scene with the president's wife in the garden. She's meeting somebody. And I had designed this concrete slab and a big concrete post. Only this concrete slab so that Rodney could put a light on it. So okay. he had a light in the middle of this black space. So he had a reason to have a light out there. And I remember watching the episode and the camera comes around and in the background on this lawn is an orange ladder. And I'm like, does nobody see that? You know, no one does that. But again, that's my baggage that I needed it to be perfect. And people didn't like me for that because I just would push. And I didn't care if I'd tread on people's feet. John Cassar would have a meeting with the producers every year to, he'd tell me, John, I got that meeting again. Oh, to save my job. He goes, yeah, to save your job. He'd go every year and he'd convince them that, no, Joseph does all this and he saves us this because he you know, what he does. And then I think the last time he went, he goes, I've got that meeting again. I was like, okay. And he went to the meeting. And he came back with this huge smile on his face. He goes, I don't know what's happened. They must have heard that you're threatening to leave because they're saying, what can we do to keep Joseph here?
That's the right answer. That's the right answer.
That was it. But yeah, I loved. And I loved all the people. I mean, I was, like I say, I was, you can see, I guess you've been online. There is an interview with me in the president's retreat.
Right. I've got yes.
beard, I'm overweight. I'm not happy. And I can't remember. Some stuff was happening in the background. And I think it was, the retreat was so beautiful to me. And I know
really
Michael
was.
Called me to the set on the first day of the shoot and sort of everybody was there and he wanted to congratulate me for just such an amazing space. But I don't know, something happened and I was just, you could see, I was really right. depressed and everyone could see. I mean, I wouldn't speak to people and it was hard. So like 24 to me was the best of times and the worst of times.
Sure.
I mean, I know that when we did, because Redemption was the first four episodes of season something or other that the studio didn't like. And so instead of writing the TV movie, they just brought out these first four episodes or first two episodes of whatever season it was.
Right.
And I did go to South Africa to shoot and I prepped it all. And you see, there was one of those things. I prepped it all. And then we had hired an art director there to do, you know, to complete my vision or, you know, whatever we had designed and built there.
Right.
And then I remember that, you know, the TV movie came out and they put his name on as the credit of the joint credit production designer. And I was like, He was my art director, and see, it's those things that I mean, I'm sure he did a good job, but he just was doing my bidding, if you see sure. what I mean.
Exactly.
But anyway.
The best of times and the worst of times.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com. And live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Yeah. Do you mind if we go back to the presidential retreat? Because I love yeah. that set. Do you remember what made you choose that motif?
That look?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was just Thunderbirds. I mean, everything, everything has that Thunderbird 1960s feel.
That's right? You just pinpointed it. Wow.
When you've got... When Kiefer was when in the presidential, because I saved it and it went into different sets. The first bunker,
right?
The desk is a copy of Jeff Tracy's desk.
Okay,
red leather top and yeah. the aluminium strips.
Yes,
it's just a copy. It's not even influenced. I right. copied the bunker that I did. Later on, very yellow with the big holes in the wall. Those are copies. That and the sunken seating area, that's where Captain Scarlet and the Angels, that's the Angels set, right?
It just blew my mind.
That, it's not, I mean, originally, I mean, those panels that have the ellipses and the circles, that literally is a copy from the Thunderbird, from the Captain Scarlet set. The big beams with holes in them, no, and the, you know, it, yeah, it hasn't yeah. that flavor. Yeah. And so the, yeah, if you were doing, you know, Jeff Tracy's, it was, yes, it's a combination of everything, you know, to do the, like I said, it has that flavor, that 60s flavor. You know, the desk was, my idea was to have this huge, instead of a big square desk, I wanted to cut, like a big redwood. So mm-hmm. if you ever saw a close-up of it, the painters did an amazing job of as if you'd cut a piece of redwood and you could see. I ran out of time, but I actually, before we varnished it, wanted to put kind of dates and things. This is where the Civil War happened. This is what, this happened. Huh. And it would have been an amazing piece.
Yeah. yeah.
But the silhouette is the Spitfire wings. They're just like... I think there's some behind the scenes stuff once that I was so into Formula One that I would just pick the colors from like the NHS are the Renault colors, the turquoise, yellow, and white and blue. I think I was having fun, I always had fun, and I wanted the audience to have fun. I was just, yeah, I remember we did this one set. That I copied, I saw out of a boutique hotel room. It was just bright yellow walls and gray plaster and all of this. It was an amazing set. It was actually where Kiefer and Jack and Audrey are in this hotel room at the beginning of the season.
Right, yes.
And I get called to the set because Rodney had sort of said he hated the yellow. And literally, myself and the painters were painting the walls gray while he lit the set because he hadn't lit the set. He hadn't prepped it. So he couldn't be seen to be taking 2 hours to light the set. So he said that the yellow wouldn't work. And it was such a shame because the whole set is only lit by a sliver of light coming through the curtains. that it's just a black space because we painted it gray. But if you'd had the yellow, it would have just been, again, another one of those, like, wow. I mean, people would sometimes, I drew stuff, or we built stuff, fluorescent greens, and I don't know. I was experimenting. I was in my playground. And I wasn't experimenting. I knew, kind of knew what I was doing. But I was always, it was like, I had an interview with me when I finished the new CTU, and the guy asked me, you know, how do you feel about this? And it was like, well, when I was a kid, I used to design stuff and build it on my desk, houses or, you know, whatever it was. Design. Now I just do the same thing, but I have 60 guys that build it. And people like Joel allowed me to do that. I mean, Joel was just such a joy to... He would let you... I mean, you'd walk into his office. If you had an idea, you get halfway through the sentence and you go, no. And then you carry on talking about it, and you go, I said no. But at the same time, you'd get halfway through, you go, yeah, sure. And you carry on explaining, he goes, didn't I say yes? Okay. And he was like that. It was like, yes, no. Mm. He was a great fan. Like I said, it was that second season. I thought it was, I've been telling people for years, it was like the fifth episode. But it must have been the fifth episode or the first episode of the second season. So he must have, well, I showed him everything in the first season.
Yeah.
And then after that, he didn't need to be bothered with me. And again, like I say, it saves you money, because if you design something that you know, I've interviewed for jobs and you've done a design and they love it, and you start Monday morning and they go, so we want this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't understand.
Right.
That's Victorian, and that's going to cost a fortune with all that detail. Again, that architecture that I use, that sort of 60s stuff, it's very, like, the laminated beams, yes, they take a while to paint,
mm-hmm.
but it's a very simple form. There's not a lot of waste of money.
Right.
When I worked with Nilo Rhodes, he showed me, when we did Virtuosity, he showed me a window. He goes, you see this window? There's no sill. He goes up like this. So when I was designing the bit where, what's the actor?
Denzel. Yes.
When Denzel walks in, he walks into a room. He takes his clothes off. He then walks into another room and he gets scanned.
Yes. Well,
I was like, why does it have to be a room? Let's just make it a cattle trough.
Okay.
And then the doors. If you make a hinge big enough, you don't need a door. And those doors are just a big hinge. See, the doors to the bunker, I'm not sure if they ever closed. They're the same design that I did on Virtuosity. They're
just
massive, massive hinges. So you don't waste money on doing little things that people won't see.
Right.
So again, all the money ends up on screen. You don't waste anything. And then again, because I didn't have to, it wasn't designed by committee. I remember working on Star Trek. Well, first of all, we did two episodes at once. So by the time I got a script, by the time we shot for the current episode for 16 days,
okay,
and then started those two episodes, perhaps I'd have 25 days before a set needed to be built, maximum. Now, on a regular television show, you get a script, you have to have the sets ready in 12 days max. But because I had so much more time, and then because when you do a design, then it goes to the producers could all have their, well, they can approve it, and if they don't approve it, you then have to redraw it, present it again. Then now we're building at the weekend. Mm-hmm. The people are on time and a half. So your set then has to be redrawn and made smaller. So these TV sets get smaller and smaller and smaller. Great. Whereas on 24, I was like, okay, I know what I'm doing. This is the set. I show the director and he goes, okay, I need a door here, or, you know, we change the layout. But the look, it's mine. And so the sets could stay One, because they were perhaps reused of other sets. I mean, the president's retreat in the first episode? No. In the second season, he's in a bunker, right? He's in a retreat. Palmer is in a retreat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, right? Yes, yes. Yeah.
That set is refurbished the year after for Division.
Hmm.
Palmer's in. It's the same corridor. It's all completely different. It's high tech. The Thunderbird, Jeff Tracy's desk is still in that set.
Still in there. Yep.
I put a black top on it that time, a leather black top. Ceiling lights have those three strips, squares, three strips of aluminium. I remember that the lights in the walls. When you got a wall light, I would always draw holes in them so that behind an actor's head, you didn't just have the light going up and down. You had these like high spots of light behind them. But that's the same set. It's like the Arras family. Oh, that's what their name was. The Arras family.
The Arras family. Yes.
The Arras family home was repurposed for the bunker. Not Palmer. What's the other president we had? The president that we had at the retreat.
Charles Logan.
Logan.
Yes, Charles Logan. Yes.
He was in a bunker.
Yes.
Now, if you watch that again, when the elevator is upstairs and he comes out of the elevators and down the steps, well, that's the first floor of the bedrooms for the Arras family. The steps are the same. corridor was their hallway to the kitchen, and the room to the left was their living room and something else. I wouldn't strike anything, but I could leave things up for perhaps months and then, you know, just come back to them. And I, you know, if you work on a lot and you've got one stage, you have to strike a set. It costs you to strike it, fold it, have construction, bring it out, set it up, and you've only set it up, you've spent thousands and you haven't done anything with it yet.
Wow.
So yeah. Again, I never, you know, you never get that freedom.
I was going to say, so you mentioned Joel Surnow was the one who hired you to be on 24. So did you happen to know Joel before 24 or?
No, my agent just, I had signed, I got Nilo, that I mentioned before, Nilo Rodis. I met him on Virtuosity. He was going to do a John Hughes movie, and he'd production designed something for John Hughes, but he didn't want to design this movie. And he told John Hughes that to hire me, he would come along. It was a film that we were going to do in New York. To hire him, I would come along. And then after John was comfortable with me, Nilo would leave. So I guess all these agents heard that this movie was going to New York. I was going to be the production designer. And so I got calls from all these agents about hiring an art director in New York. And so I think I got a call from three or four agents. And John called. He was with Montana Artists, and he wanted me to hire one of his art directors. On the Monday night, I literally had the ticket to New York in my hand.
Hmm.
Disney canceled the movie. So the following day, I call all these agents, including John, and said, the movie's been... Oh, because every time I spoke to these agents, they would say, who's your agent? And I'd say, I don't have an agent. Oh, well, we must meet and talk and blah, blah, blah. All of that. I called every single agent, and every single agent wasn't interested in now hiring me or talking to me as a production, because I only had one credit at that time, a small kids movie called The Legend of Pirates Point or something, The Treasure of Pirates Point.
Okay.
And John at Montana Artists was the only person that went, no, I still want to meet you.
Hmm.
So I met him, and he got me. I think he got me. I don't think I'd done The Legend of Pirates Point or Treasure of Pirates Point then. I don't think I had any credit.
Okay.
So So John got me that, and I literally did this movie. I don't know how much it cost. I know that I built a galleon and all of that. My budget was 20 grand, and I handed $3,000 back.
Right, wow, yeah. That sounds like your track record.
Right. And then
they like people like you.
Then John got me my meeting with Joel. And I remember I didn't do any designs because there was nothing to really, I don't think there was a script.
Right.
I remember doing this poster that Joel hated. I understand why. But he still saw something in me that, like I said, he called my agent. He said, look, I think he called and didn't get the job. He said, I really wanted Joseph, but they've gone with somebody else.
Hmm.
And then thank God the other person didn't want to do the series because he came back and did series. Did they do 9 or 8? Did I do 7 or 8? I don't know. The last season in LA, Carlos came back and took over because I guess he didn't do the movies and things he wanted to. Now he's all right doing television.
Right, so right.
He then went back to television. He took over. But again, it was stunning to watch, or I heard. So we had the old CTU, and even though CTU wasn't going to be, I don't know. I remember people telling me, I can't believe, after watching 8 years of me reusing sets, he just struck everything and started again. And it was like, what a waste.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The key word is repurposed. You can repurpose everything. And for our group, our 24 Universe group online, I guarantee after this discussion, they're going to go back and they're going to look at all the sets that you said. Well, if you notice this, all the Easter eggs that are in there, you'll see the black top over the desk. You'll see that, which is amazing. Our group will do that kind of stuff. They'll do that kind of research and pull that up. So no, we appreciate those. Again, stories of repurposing and saving money.
Mm-hmm. There's always my whole, every episode, I could watch it with you guys and go, oh, you see that there in the background?
Yeah.
That's me paying homage to this. That's me paying homage. If you ever see a number 2, I don't think I did in the bunker on the big 3. Actually, I think it probably is. The 3 on the elevator door is probably the same font as Thunderbird 3.
Right.
But I know in Apollo 13, I did Apollo 13, and I know in Virtuosity, and there's another movie I did, there's a big number 2, and it's the Thunderbird number 2.
Okay,
it's just always those things that, like, you know, when we did Star Trek, you never could read them, but I know Mike Okuda, we used to do these, like, you know, instructions, like, on the nuclear whatever it was,
and
the 3 points, the rules of rules are never eat in a restaurant called Mum's, never play cards with a man called Doc, and never ever fuck with the art department. Or
exactly, because I think those are good things to live by.
That's right, because on the Enterprise bridge, Mike was doing this big graphic, and he. I said, "Oh, it'd be really cool on the in the dock to just put a Porsche." And he goes, "We can't do that." And I think we put a Porsche and sent some rubber ducks, and it was like, "That's fun." And I think it's become, I mean, people know about it now. Have you seen the rubber ducks or the Porsche on the deck of the Enterprise? Because people love that. This was, you know.
Well, Joseph, why don't we just start another podcast where we watch the episodes with you? And then you do commentary. Because I can tell you, there are three, you did 3 commentaries for the series, and they were all with John Cassar. And they're so entertaining. I was listening to the last one you did, season 6, last night. And it's like, to hear the two of you go back and forth, I love the backstory. I love that, you know, the idea of, well, this is the set from there, but you didn't recognize it because we changed things up. Fascinating.
Yeah, John and I were partners in everything. We used to get the script, and that was our moment of the episode. We would go to our offices. Sometimes I would read it in his office, but most of the time he would lock his door and I would lock my door, and we would read the episode because that's the only time we got to enjoy the surprises or whatever. And then we would, he would support me no end. I remember when we did the opening of the episode of the season where we had the nuclear bomb that goes off.
Right.
And see, this
season six.
Right. So this, because my mouth used to get me into trouble because I don't put, well, what's the saying? You don't put it in gear before, you know, pressing the accelerator.
Right.
I remember, I'm not sure if we read the script, but we're there. I'm at the conference table with all the production crew and the writers. And you get, you know, so a helicopter has crashed in the middle of the street. Mm. And there's a pilot. The pilot is trapped underneath the rotor blade. And I remember saying out loud, how the fuck does that happen?
Right.
How does the pilot fall out of the helicopter and not be sliced in two by this rotor blade?
Yeah.
And of course, the writers all, you know, they were like, well, one, how dare you talk to us like that? And two, you know, who do you think you are? And two, you'll fix it because we know you'll fix it, you know. Anyway, so I went away and I was like, what we could do is because of LAX, because of the 9/11, they were knocking down all these houses to make a big security center.
Okay.
So all these small houses, they were demolishing. So I said, what we could do is take a helicopter and have it crashed into the top of this building, have Jack round the corner and sees the helicopter up there. The pilot's still in it. Jack scales this building. He pulls the pilot out of the helicopter. And the helicopter, you know, falls to the ground, big explosion, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's a bit expensive for the TV show, but it's exciting for the first episode. So I pushed and pushed and pushed it. And basically the UPM said, no, we're not. And I remember telling John this, Michael's not going to go for it. He doesn't, he says, I have to put the helicopter on the lawn in front of the house. Mm. John's like, it's just not exciting. So anyway, John comes to the scout with us, and we're there at the house. And I don't know how it is, but I know that John's in front of me, and I'm like doing this, going, that's the roof I want to put it on.
Mm, yeah.
And John's looking and listening, and it's like, so here's going to put the helicopter and blah blah blah. And John goes, wouldn't it be more fun to put the helicopter up on that roof and Jack climb this building and it just falls down? And of course, Michael Click then goes, oh, okay, obviously you've been talking to Joseph. And it took us, I mean, it was a lot of work. It took us 5 days. I know, but then the special effects guys, they, you know, wires through the house. So when it's cut and it had to be safe, I remember Kiefer turning up and he's like, you want me to climb up there? And I was like, yeah, watch. Look, I can do it because I placed the satellite dish and the television aerial and whatever. And you show him once and Kiefer's like, oh, yeah, all right. And he goes up and he pulls the pilot out and he goes, and for weeks before that episode aired, Fox would play that scene. Coming up on Monday, 24th. And I calculate, I don't know how many times it played, but let's add up all those 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
All the channels. That's an hour of television that was paid for by an exciting sequence.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I mean, you held the line, and you said hitting the accelerator before you shift gears. That's pretty much how you described 24. So in the spirit of 24, I would think you held the line and it paid off because, like I said, you were successful in getting the look and saying, this is what 24 is. And we appreciate that from an audience level in so many ways. We appreciate that. We'll be right back.
Michael Barrister.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.